everyone. We have a bit of a different episode this week. This month we're celebrating the 200th episode of the podcast. I can't believe we've reached this milestone, but it's amazing. I wouldn't have been able to do it without all of you listening, and I honestly can't thank you enough. I have decided to release a case that I have just released on Patreon as a bonus episode. This case was chosen by patrons in the monthly poll, and as I was writing it, I realised it was a case that needed to be listened to by a wider audience, and it's an important one. I thought it would be a good one to release as our 200th episode, and it also gives everyone an idea for what the Patreon bonus episodes are like, if anyone's on the fence about signing up for them. Thanks for the last 200 episodes, it's been wonderful. Hi, and welcome back to the Unseen Podcast, a podcast dedicated to missing people, unresolved cases, and UK true crime. In this month's bonus episode, we're going to be exploring a harrowing and extremely sad case from 1981. 8-year-old Vishal Mehrotra went missing in July 1981 from his home in southwest London. His remains were later found in Surrey. What had happened to Vishal, and why had he become the victim of a murder? This episode, while not graphic, does contain some descriptions of the murder of a child, and also includes some description of child abuse, so listener discretion is advised. July the 29th, 1981, was a memorable day for many people in the UK. This day was going to be one of the biggest days in the recent history of the royal family. Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer were getting married that day, and the furor surrounding the wedding was one that had taken over the country. People were referring to it as the wedding of the century, and people in the UK and also around the world had been organising events, activities and parties in celebration of the ceremony. It was set to be one of the biggest and most lavish events that had been seen in years, and everyone wanted to be included. Everyone wanted to see Charles and Diana and get a look at her £9,000 dress and the traditional glass coach that she arrived in. The wedding is said to have been watched by 750 million people worldwide, as it was shown in many of the Commonwealth countries, and the wedding was also making headlines internationally. Many normal families in the UK were equally as excited about the event, and had made plans to watch it on TV, or in some cases, travel to where it was taking place at St Paul's Cathedral. One of these excited families was the Mehrotra family. They lived in Putney in southwest London, and had made this area their home. Vishambhar Mehrotra was a solicitor, and lived with his son Vishal and younger daughter Mamta. The family had moved from India in 1978 and settled in Putney. The children's mother, Aruna, had stayed in India and had separated from Vishambhar. For that reason, he had hired a live-in nanny, Juanita Cavallo, to take care of the children while he was busy working. By the time of the royal wedding in 1981, Vishal was 8 years old and was a happy, vibrant boy who enjoyed his own independence. The Mehrotra family were also excited by the idea of seeing the royal wedding and being part of the festivities. Juanita, Mamta and Vishal all travelled to Vishambhar's office on the train to watch the events unfold. The plan was that Juanita and the children would travel back on the train later that day and then go home. They did this, travelling back in the early afternoon to East Putney. Vishambhar later explained that he went home as he was tired, and the children, along with Juanita, went to Putney High Street. The children hadn't been feeling well and she decided that she wanted to buy them some cough syrup to help. It was at this point that Vishal explained that he was also feeling tired and he just wanted to go home. Juanita stated that she believed he was responsible enough to make the journey home by himself, and told him that she would meet him there. This is what Juanita did, and her and Mamta returned home when they had bought the cough syrup. It's known that when they returned home, they didn't see Vishal, but Juanita thought that he may have been playing out, and decided to go and take a nap with Mamta, they woke up at around 4:30 p.m. It had been around 3 hours since they had returned on the train, and when Joanita woke up, she realised that Vishal was still nowhere to be found. The family began to check everywhere they thought he could be, and check the surroundings of the house to make sure he wasn't just out playing somewhere. It seemed strange that they hadn't seen him at all, and it quickly became a concern. Concern turned to panic when by that evening he still hadn't returned and he couldn't be found anywhere. It was at this point that Vishambar decided to contact the Metropolitan Police. The police also agreed that Vishal's disappearance was a concern and that the fact that he hadn't returned was alarming. The hope was, of course, that he would be found quickly and that he would be safe. The worry was the amount of time that he had been missing for. By the time he was reported missing, Vishal hadn't been seen by his family for around 5.5 hours. Where could he be? Searches of the local area began, including along the route that he had possibly taken from Putney High Street to his home. It was believed that this route was between Upper Richmond Road and Disraeli Road, where the family lived. This was around 0.6 of a mile and would have taken about 15 minutes to walk. If something had happened to Vishal on this journey, then perhaps there would have been some evidence on this route. The route was searched by officers along with thermal imaging cameras. The River Thames close to the route was also checked, but with nothing being recovered. Vishal's family were beside themselves with worry and couldn't understand what could have happened to him. His mother travelled over from India to be with her family and to try and help with any searches. Police made clear in early media reports about Vishal's disappearance that they were extremely worried about his safety. A police spokesman told the media, "We are satisfied that this is not a family or domestic matter. We are seriously concerned for the boy's safety." Days passed and there was no evidence that pointed to what had happened to Vishal or where he could be. The Metropolitan Police stepped up the investigation around 2 weeks after his disappearance and began drafting in extra officers to conduct door-to-door inquiries in a wider area. The inquiries were taking place in the Putney and Wandsworth areas. It appears that this stepped-up investigation was a result of two possible sightings of Vishal that had been called into police. One of these sightings was at Deodore Road in Putney at around 5 p.m. on the evening that he disappeared. This sighting was interesting to police, as while it was an 18-minute walk from Upper Richmond Road and the High Street, it was only a 6-minute walk from Disraeli Road where the family lived. It was also close to a house that Vishambar rented out. If this had been Vishal, the police had to check out the lead, and Detective Chief Inspector Jim Begg told the media that they were actively pursuing this sighting. It also meant, however, that lots of resources were put into checking out this tip, and perhaps not into other areas. As a result of these tips coming in, police decided to issue a new photograph of Vishal to the media that was only 3 months old. It was hoped more tips would continue to come in. Vishal's family appealed for information and continued to hope and pray that something would be found. International links were looked into as Vishal was born in India. All international travel, however, was ruled out by police and Interpol. How could an 8-year-old boy simply have disappeared? I'm so excited to speak to you about the sponsor of today's show, Bed Stew. For over 25 years, Bed Stew have been creating the most beautiful, handcrafted, organic leather boots, shoes, bags, and accessories for both men and women. Bed Stew are an eco-conscious and family-run business and are passionate about creating unique products using recycled, renewable, organic and reused materials. They believe in the four R's, recycle, reduce, reuse and renewable, and use this ethos whenever they create products. The platforms used in their shoes are made from recycled material from industrial production waste and contain zero harmful solvents. The products are made to be long-lasting, and with Bedstoo's Restore and Repair programme, landfill waste is avoided. Like many of us in 2022, I'm very passionate about protecting our natural world, and this is one of Bedstoo's main objectives. All of the products are created with leathers prepared using natural tannins such as tree bark and leaves, and the cork and latex used in their products are harvested from naturally renewable sources, which means there is no destruction of habitats as a result. I was lucky enough to get my hands on two of their amazing products, and I genuinely cannot speak highly enough of the quality and craftsmanship that has gone into making them. Anyone that knows me knows that I am obsessed with autumn, and I have already been thinking forward to my next pair of boots for that season. I ordered the Bristol Tall boots in the Tiesta de Morrow rustic colour, and I'm in love with them. They're such amazing quality, and the colour will go beautifully with all of the autumnal colours that I love. I also ordered the Bayshore Teak rustic bag. This is perfect for me as a mum of a toddler because I often fill my handbag full of stuff I don't ever need, and this is great for just putting in some essentials like cards, cash, and your phone. It's great for on-the-go people, and like the Bristol boots, the quality and the colour are amazing. You can tell that so much love go into these products and they are produced with true cobbler craftsmanship. I have posted the products on my social media pages, so I would encourage you to have a look. Head over to Bedstoo to have a look at the extensive collection of shoes, boots and accessories for both men and women. Quote US20 at checkout to receive 20% off your first order. Link to the website will be in the show notes. Thanks again to Bedstoo for sponsoring this episode. Weeks and months passed, and Vishal's disappearance remained unsolved. The longer time that passed, the less hope that the police had that he was going to be found alive. On the 25th of February 1982, 7 months after he was reported missing, the worst news was reported to police. Remains had been recovered. These remains would eventually be identified as Vishal's, but their location was nowhere anybody had expected, and it certainly wasn't an area where police had focused their attention. Two men were out shooting pigeons close to Durley Marsh Farm in the village of Rogate in West Sussex, close to the town of Petersfield, when they came across what looked to be human remains. The remains were made up of a skull, vertebrae, and rib bones. The police were immediately called out to the scene to analyse what had been found, and discovered that the bones had originally been buried in a bog on the land. The bones had been displaced by animals, and that was how they had eventually been uncovered. The remains were sent off to be analysed, and it was found that they did belong to Vishal Marotra. This obviously came as a huge shock for Vishal's family, and they were absolutely devastated by the news. The fact that his remains had been found so far away from where he lived and had last been seen was very difficult to comprehend. The area where the remains had been found was around 50 miles from Putney and would have taken just over an hour to get there in a car. Within a week of the remains being found, police told the media that they were treating Vishal's death as suspicious, and a special incident room had been set up to head the investigation. The idea that someone had possibly kidnapped Vishal and taken him out to this area was horrifying, and something which I imagine his family didn't want to think about. A wider area was excavated, with many more officers being drafted in. More bones were found and sent off for forensic analysis. There was clearly a lot that the officers needed to figure out. How had Vishal travelled so far? Why had he been brought to this location, and who would have wanted to kill him? There was a theory early on that whoever had taken him to the farm knew the area well, and that was the reason why he'd been brought there. There were no firm conclusions as to what had happened to Vishal, as the remains didn't point to a particular cause of death. An inquest was held in 1983, and the conclusion further indicated this. The inquest ended with an open verdict, meaning that there wasn't enough evidence to what had really happened to Vishal. However, it was noted that the coroner believed that foul play was involved. While the police were unsure of the motives in this case and weren't making much progress, Vishambar was able to pass on some information. Just a few months after Vishal's disappearance, he had received a strange phone call at his home. It was from a man reportedly in his 20s who told Vishambar that he might have some information about Vishal's whereabouts. He stated that he believed that his disappearance may be connected to Elm Guest House. Elm Guest House was a hotel located on Rocks Lane in southeast London, just 1.5 miles away from where Vishal lived. Vishambar was told that there was a group of high-profile paedophiles that visited the guest house often, and that this could be where Vishal had been taken. This man explained to Vishambar that he had already contacted the police to inform them of what he knew, but nobody had ever got back to him about it. Vishambar recorded the conversation with the man and handed the information to the officers in charge of the investigation. Vishambar was told that this call was probably a hoax or a crank call and he should just ignore it. He stated in 2014, "There was information passed to me which I gave to police at the time, but it was never looked at and the trail went cold. I taped the whole conversation and gave a copy to the police. They just dismissed it, said it was probably a crank call." This, however, would not be the last time that anyone heard about Elm Guest House, and many years later a horrifying story would start to emerge about possible goings-on at the establishment. In 2012, Operation Fairbank was launched with the sole focus to investigate sexual abuse claims that had been made by Carl Beach. Beach had stated that he and several other children were the victims of sexual abuse at the hands of high-profile and famous men who frequented Elm Guest House, amongst other locations in London. He documented abuse that he had suffered, and some frightening descriptions of murders that he'd had to witness. He explained that one of these murders was that of Martin Allen, who had disappeared in 1979, and the other was the murder of Vishal Marotra 2 years later. Police began to investigate these claims, and took them seriously, as the Jimmy Savile scandal had just emerged, and many members of the public believed that other high-profile people must have been involved in this for it to have gone on for so long. Operation Fairbank and the later Operation Midland were set up to investigate these claims and find any evidence to confirm the allegations made against certain people. The investigation found that Elm Guest House was used by male sex workers during the 1970s, and in 1982 the guest house was raided. The owners were charged with running a disorderly house, but nothing more came from this raid. The police were unable to corroborate any of the allegations made by Carl Beach, and no one was convicted with sexual abuse charges in relation to Elm Guest House. In 2019, Carl Beach was arrested himself for perverting the course of justice and fraud for making up the allegations, and child pornography charges for viewing and downloading inappropriate images. He was sentenced to 18 years in prison. The fact that Carl Beach was found to be making up many of the claims that he made didn't deter people from believing that a paedophile ring does exist and that murders could also be connected to it. From the moment that the allegations were made public, the rumours of who could be involved and what it could mean have been circulating. Vishambar was one of the people to take interest in Carl Beach's allegations, and the mention of Elm Guest House no doubt rang bells for him. He had been made aware of it back in 1981 when Vishal had gone missing. If Carl Beach had made up the allegations, who had rang him back then and told him about it, and how did they know? Vishambar had made it clear since Vishal's remains were found that he does not believe the police have done enough to try and find Vishal's killers and to solve the case. In 2014, he stated, After 30 years, the police are still failing to find the person responsible for my son's death. I've come to the conclusion that maybe, for whatever reason, they haven't really done their homework. If high-profile people were involved, this must be exposed. If there was a cover-up, I need to know. If the police have any sympathy for us as a family, for what we have been through and are still going through, they should be in touch with me now to tell me that this has come to light. They need to be looking at my son's case in connection with this. I haven't heard from them on this. I haven't heard from them for years and years. A detective contacted me 10 years or so after my son's death to say he was going to look at it again to reinvestigate. Then nothing. It all went quiet. The theory of a possible connection to a paedophile ring wasn't completely out of the question after the dismissal of Carl Beach's allegations. There was another possible connection to Sidney Cook. Cook is a convicted paedophile who has confessed to molesting several children throughout the 1970s, 80s and 90s. He and around 12 other men were part of a paedophile ring, and they would abduct young boys off the street. Cook was known to work on funfairs, residential streets and other places where children would feel relatively safe, and this was how he managed to abduct them. In 1989, Cook was sentenced to 19 years for the manslaughter of 14-year-old Jason Swift. While in prison, Cook's accomplices also implicated him in the 1984 disappearance of 7-year-old Mark Tildesley, saying that he had lured him from the funfair in Wokingham and then assaulted and murdered him. His body has never been found, and Cook has not disclosed where it might be. Of interest to Vishal's investigation was the fact that it was known that the gang had kidnapped children from London and then their bodies had been recovered from other locations. One of Cook's accomplices implicated him in the 1985 murder of 6-year-old Barry Lewis. He had been abducted from South London and his body was found in Essex the next year. This was very similar to Vishal's murder, in that his body was found far away from where he'd last been seen. Vishal's disappearance seemed to match that of other boys who had been abducted by the gang. There has been, however, no public connection announced between Vishal's murder and any other investigation into Cook's movements and crimes. Sidney Cook was eventually given 2 life sentences for admitting that he led a campaign of abuse against 2 young boys during the 1970s. He still remains in prison to the present day, and in 2021 was denied parole for the 10th time. Despite being 95, it's claimed that his behaviour in prison has been mixed and that the allegations about him still remain.
Reverie, the state of being pleasantly lost in one's thoughts, a daydream. But what if those daydreams turn to nightmares? Reverie True Crime shines a light on the dark tragedies that have happened and are continuing to happen all throughout the world. We interview and work with families to bring awareness to forms of injustice. We explore the depths of cases from around the world to include missing persons, mysteries, and more. Reverie True Crime is found wherever you're listening to this podcast. Remember, you don't have to live in fear, but stay aware of your surroundings. Stay safe and take care.
The number of rumours and allegations surrounding Vishal and several other boys' disappearances have dominated the headlines over the years. But the truth is there hasn't been much progress made on Vishal's murder investigation. Vishambar has expressed his frustration and disappointment about the handling of the case and explained that he has not been kept up to date with what has been happening. In 2016, a Sussex report was released under the Freedom of Information Act that showed that there were several witness sightings on or in the days after Vishal had disappeared. The report states that on the night he vanished, a witness saw 2 men in a lay-by close to where Vishal's remains were found. They were throwing a 4 to 5 feet Hessian sack over a fence, while a woman who was described as Asian was waiting in a car. Another witness saw 3 Asian men in a car at the petrol station earlier that day. They had a boy with them. The report documented that another witness had also spotted an Asian man pushing a young boy into a car close to the area where Vishal disappeared from. The boy appeared very surprised. When this information came out, Vishambar explained that he had never been told about any of this, and that the fact that all of these statements described Asian men being at the scene was a shock. He told the Daily Mail, "I had no idea there was an Asian connection. I have never been told. How the hell in 34 years have I never been informed of this? Until today, nobody knew about this, so that in itself, in my opinion, is a serious case of negligence. I don't understand it." In 2020, more information was revealed in Vishal's case, causing Vishambar to call for a reinvestigation. A sexual abuse survivor came forward to police to state that he knew of paedophiles that were working in the area at the time, one of which was known to Vishal. There was also information reported about a known child abuser being in possession of a file named Vishal. This was important information, along with the fact that at the time of his disappearance, someone made a confession saying that they had committed the murder. Police explained that this confession was found to be false and that it was actually retracted a day later. A report by Sussex Police also stated that they weren't sure that they had found the exact location where Vishal's body had been buried before it was disturbed by animals. The report also states that evidence in the case had been incinerated, including strands of Vishal's hair. This lack of care for evidence all contributes to Vishambar's opinion that the police do not care about his son's murder. He stated in 2020, "As far as I'm concerned, there are far too many questions which Sussex Police must answer, and they have, in my opinion, not done any proper investigation into the death of my son." In June of 2021, he went further and stated that he believed that Sussex Police were guilty of institutional racism and had neglected to investigate Vishal's murder properly as a result of this. He explained to the BBC, "I have no doubt that there's racism here, otherwise why would they try to always brush it under the carpet? When it comes to white children, they'll fly to Portugal, Germany, everywhere. And years have gone by and they will still investigate and keep looking, and money doesn't seem to be a problem. But for my son, I can't see that they've done anything constructive by way of investigation at all." Sussex Police strenuously deny this, and state that the original investigation was as thorough as it possibly could be. The Independent Police Complaints Commission stated that the case wasn't actually reviewed until 2015. 34 years after Vishal's murder. They also refuted that Sussex Police reviewed it in 2005, saying that a formal procedure didn't actually take place. Sussex Police deny any evidence of institutional racism and stated, "We firmly refute any suggestion that our inquiries over the past 40 years have been hampered or influenced in any way by institutional racism. Reports of the 1982 investigation make very clear the thorough and considered nature of detailed and painstaking work that officers and staff have carried out." They also confirmed that they had completed thorough and carefully considered inquiries, but the information provided no viable or credible lines of inquiry. It's clear that Vishal's family are upset and saddened by the lack of progress and the perceived lack of interest in his case. There is no denying that the case hasn't moved on since 1981 when it occurred, and we're still no closer to finding out what happened to Vishal. Vishambar has been clear in the past that he believes a cover-up did happen, and that this is the reason why his son's murder has still not been solved. It's such a tragedy that this happened to an 8-year-old boy and seems completely senseless. The issues surrounding the Elm Guesthouse allegations and the now refuted statements made by Carl Beach have dominated the conversation. And while Vishal's case has been brought up several times in relation to it, has almost become forgotten about in the sensational headlines. It's clear that Vishal was abducted from the street near where he lived and was then murdered and buried at Durnley Farm. Police believed whoever had put him there may have known the area well and had some sort of connection. Were the sightings of the three men and the woman related to Vishal's disappearance, or were they completely separate? Was the phone call to Vishambar about the disappearance a hoax, like the police said, or did this person have crucial information that wasn't looked into? Was Vishal's disappearance linked to other missing people, like Martin Allen? These are all questions that have no answers at this point in time, and like Vishal's family, I have the same hope that police will continue to look into it thoroughly. Sussex Police have stated that it's an open investigation and they will always look into any leads that are sent to them. If you know anything about Vishal Marotra's murder in 1981, then please contact Sussex Police at their website at www.sussex.police.uk or phone them on 101, quoting Operation Moor. Thank you for listening to this 200th episode of the Unseen podcast. Thank you again to Bed Stew for sponsoring the episode. Support the podcast by visiting their website and use code US20 for 20% off your first order. If you would like to support the podcast further, then you can on Patreon and contribute to the exclusive polls to get extra bonus episodes like this one every month. You can also get access to new episodes early and ad-free. You can use the link in the show notes to visit Patreon. You can also support us by reviewing the podcast wherever you listen, including Spotify, and also just share the episodes. You can subscribe on YouTube and follow us on social media. You can now also subscribe and listen to my new podcast, 10 Minute True Crime, which tells infamous crimes in a short form, bite-sized 10 minutes. For people on the go or who just like the facts. Find that wherever you listen and in the show notes. As always, I'm Caprice, and this has been Unseen.